Hello, my name is Shani Tarragon. Welcome to Torah Timcha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. Today, we will be studying Sefer Kohelet, Perek Daled, Chapter 4. Unfortunately, upon further reflection, Bishapti ve'ereh, Kohelet finds that the reality of hedonism fails to meet the expectations of his utopian dream. The Woodstock revelers returned to find a world that still included suffering and oppression. In fact, what sharpens the pain is society's insensitivity to the plight of its copious victims. Deferral of social ability and therefore responsibility to God, coupled with preoccupation with undiluted personal pleasure, can naturally lead to the disregard of others' anguish. The beginning of chapter 4 represents, then, the rebuttal of a philosophy dedicated to pleasure. This seems to be the voice, as we're going to see in just a moment, of the Isha Ma'asim, of the Amil, who basically looks at the life of the hedonist and he says, you're forgetting something. This is another voice of Kohelet. Vishavti ani ve'ere et kol ha'ashukim. Wait a second, Mr. Hedonist. According to your pleasure-based philosophy, look at all the people who are oppressed in this world. According to you, if you sit back, relax, then you should enjoy. Then really, everyone should be able to receive pleasure in this world. But he says, I look around and I see that there are people who are oppressed. Asher na'asim tachat ha'shemesh. And according to your philosophy, that was predetermined. God made people who are going to suffer in this world. Vinei demat hashukim. And what are you going to tell them when you see them crying? Ve'ein lahem menachem. There's no consolation. You're going to tell them that they were predetermined to suffer in this world, but that defies what you believe is meaningful in this world. You said that the whole point of this world is for pleasure, and therefore, miyadosh kehem koach, ein lahem menachem. There's no pleasure for them. There's no consolation for them. Rather, according to your philosophy, pasuk bet v'shabeach ani et hameitim shekvar metu min hachayim. If their whole lives they're not going to be able to experience pleasure, then they're not living up to what's meaningful in life. They may as well be dead, because at least asher hem hachayim adina, at least they've left this life of suffering. And therefore, pasuk gimel v'tov mishnehem. Et asher aden lo haya, asher lo ra'a tamasa hara asher nasa tachat hashemesh. Better for such people who are oppressed to not having been born even in this world, so that they would have never seen the oppression that they would experience in this world. Basically, he's teaching us that although the people at the top of society's ladder may see life as beautiful, most of the world's inhabitants, both in the past and even in the present, experience life, some people, more often as a nightmare. Even today, life for most people, especially but not only outside of a few of developed countries, still comprises terrible suffering. Most children still today, for example, live beneath the poverty level. If so, then according to the philosophy of hedonism, better death than life. In fact, better to have never been born. This is yet another negation of the hedonistic ideal presented in Chapter 3. Life, even for the upper classes, is replete with suffering, specifically the inevitable anguish, as he continues now in the next verse, of kin'at ish mireyehu, jealousy. There is always further to advance and more to enjoy, and always others that are ahead on the ladder of success. Judging life's meaning by your pleasure, by how far one advances or how much one enjoys naturally, he says that goes hand in hand with jealousy and ruthless competition, people eating their hearts out, as he says in Pasuk Hey. They're going to yearn for unattainable contentment, and that in itself diminishes the possibility of pleasure. Haksil chobeket yadav ochelet b'saro, such a person is really eating his heart out. Tov melo kaf nachat, anyone would rather even a little bit of pleasure. Memelo kaf nayim amal v'ruach v'ruot ruach. Such a person would definitely like or prefer a little bit of pleasure to the pleasure that you're speaking about, but is accompanied by jealousy. V'shavti ani ve'ere hevel tachat hashemesh. And therefore, Pasuk Zayin's Vishafti introduces the rat race's worst characteristic, that of loneliness. In your philosophy, says this speaker, it's every man for himself, in which case true friendship is impossible. In fact, even relatives cannot be trusted, for they're too looking out for themselves. They're selfish. The work is endless, and satisfaction, then, is unrealizable. Lemi ani amel umachaseret nafshi mitova. Who am I working for then? It's all about me. That's Inyan Rahu. This loneliness fosters a longing for kinship. Better two than one, for if they fall, then they can help each other up, as he says in Pasuk Yud. If it's every person for themselves, then what happens is that if you see someone fall, you tell yourself, well, that was predetermined, and that's the person's life. He's supposed to be living on his own. I'm not going to help him. And that means that when I'm alone, then people are going to leave me to suffer in my agony as well. Rather, two people together can create warmth. But ulechad echicham, one person cannot generate that heat. Ve'im yitzkufu ha'echad, hashnayim yamdu negdo. If one is assaulted, two can stand against him. Va'chut ha'mishulash lo b'meira yenatek. Two will be able to protect, and three is even better than two. What he basically teaches us here is that even if the two fail, at least they truly empathize enough to warm or to console one another. At least man doesn't have to endure the loneliness of an insensitive, selfish, pleasure-based world that was described earlier. So with that, better a fraternity of three that can confront even harsher opposition. It's not only the aid and the sympathy of the other, which is significant, but also feeling part of something more meaningful than oneself. Work, ma'asim, seems more meaningful if it's devoted to a social consortium that one associates with and is supported by. In contemporary times, these feelings, as we know, are the root of socialist movements meant to protect and inspire victims of the capitalist, pleasure-based, individualistic systems. So now we understand that this Amel, the man of Maasim, is a socialist. He basically says, well, it's clearly not the point of the world to live in a capitalist, pleasure-based, every person out for themselves society. Such socialist movements, though, are not a new phenomenon. Many opportunists have used populist platforms to topple the establishment. Unfortunately, this same speaker tells us that there are also shortcomings to socialism. Even if one can protect one another, at the same time, the collective nature is also something that is short-lived. As he tells us in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Tov yeled miskein v'chacham mimelech zakein uksil asher lo yada lihizaher od. There is always a young, wise child who is going to take over from the foolish king. Perhaps a reference of David and Shaul. Perhaps a reference of Yerovam ben Nevat and Shlomo HaMelech himself, who recognizes that the younger ones are always going to revolutionize and change whatever you try to accomplish and work and do in this world. And as he tells us in the next pasuk, Yudalid, kimi beit hasurim yatzal mumloch, ki gam umachuto nolad rash. This new up-and-coming leader and revolutionary comes from the prison. But then again, so did the previous leader. In other words, he sees the cyclical nature of socialism, capitalism, one can even call it even the cycle of political reform. First the Democrats and then the Republicans, the Likud and the Labor and all the different parties and those different collective groups that attempt to change things. He says, Ra'iti et kol ha'chayim ha'malchim tachat ha'shemesh im ha'yelet ha'sheni asher yamu tachtav. One has to realize that socialist movements are going to be short-lived phenomena. Yerovam ben Nevat used the similar platform against Shlomo and later Shlomo's successor, Rechavam. The campaign eventually led to the division of the unified empire that Shlomo worked so hard to create and to solidify. Unfortunately, Yerovam never actually instituted true social reform because then his malchut is taken over by the next king, by Baasha. And similarly, the speaker here concludes by saying, Pasuk Tetzayin, Ein Ketz L'chol Ha'am, L'chol Asher Hayal Lepneihem, Gam Achronim Lo Yismuchu Bo, Ki Gam Zehebel V'Rayon Ruach. He dismisses himself. He realizes that even the activist model is very short-lived. In this perek's last section, Kohelet describes this general phenomenon and seems to predict the outcome of even Yerovam's usurping of power. The abject youth that he was speaking about, Yerovam, will prevail over the old foolish king, Shlomo himself, who's no longer alert enough to protect himself. The youth will successfully emerge from prison, just as we know that Yerovam languished in Egyptian prison, and eventually capture much of Shlomo's throne. Despite the change in leadership, however, the reality remains unchanged. The future will not be better than the past, as he says in Pasuk Tetzayin. This realization, of course, only intensifies a very already frustrated Kohelet, and at the same time, we, his readers. Which brings us to the last pasuk of Perek Zalid, which in fact is really the introduction to Perek Hay. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmat, Malka Esther, Batzvi Yosef, Zechrona Lebrecha.